I usually have a rule that if I put words on a slide, I have to read them, but I'm not going to follow that rule today because we would be here for a very long time. But as far as the regulatory snapshot, the first thing we wanted to point out is that although it may feel to you like Title IX covers, gobbles, destroys everything, it does not actually apply to everything. Generally speaking, yes, if you receive federal funding, it's going to sweep over all of your programs and activities. But there are a few exceptions. So, for example, there religious exception. There is a religious exception. There is also the exemption for fraternities and sororities, social organizations. And then in undergraduate higher education, if you traditionally accepted only one gender, you can still do so. And this is all sort of set forth in the actual regulations. And these were actually in the regulations before 2020 as well. And as the Trump administration, and now I am learning, the Texas state government likes to point out very regularly, Title IX does include some language that suggests that there are circumstances where you can treat boys and girls differently, male and females differently. So for example, separate housing on the basis of sex is allowed, separate toilets, locker rooms, and shower facilities. You can have separation of sexes during certain physical sports. That's obviously a big one these days. And you generally can have those separations. And we'll talk about how that impacts, how that comes into play with transgender issues a little bit at the end. You also have under the regulation, you have proportionality requirements with respect to financial aid, scholarships, and then, as Lisa mentioned, pregnant students really have, you know, a fair number of rights under this law. I will tell you, for any of you who are a part of ATXA, I'm very active on their listserv, so if you're on there, you're probably really annoyed of me already. But one thing that I have noticed over the past year or so is just how many questions there are about pregnancy, pregnant and parenting students, and what rights are responsible for them. So it's not really a hot topic that you hear about all that much in the media, but if you're practicing in this area, it's one that you're going to hear about quite a bit. We're going to talk about this more later, too, but yes, Title IX does include language in the regulations stating that it applies to discrimination based on employment. So we will deal with that particularly fun headache a little bit later. Title IX prohibits retaliation, and so this is really no different than the prohibitions against retaliation that apply in all the other contexts. But I will point out that, like in other contexts, a person doesn't have to have a valid claim. It doesn't have to be proved to have been supported by the evidence in order to be protected from retaliation. And this is like one of my favorite sorry, not sorry moments with administrators in K-12 is when I have to tell them, no, actually, you do still have to work with that student, even though they, you know, accused you of something that you were found not to have been responsible for. Or yes, you do have to continue working with your colleague, even though they accused you of something. Even if it's proved not to be substantiated, you are still covered if you made it the complaint in good faith. All right, so then the big ones. As Lisa mentioned, maybe not what we started out thinking about when we thought of Title IX when it was first passed, but now, unless you've been living under a rock since 2010, you are aware that sexual harassment is a really important thing under Title IX. And it's not just something that happened starting in 2020 with the new regs. It really started back in the Obama administration with all that guidance that sort of started this issue. And then we have athletics, which I agree that most people, when you ask them what they think of when they think of Title IX, they say athletics. I have even had the privilege of multiple times as an OCR investigator having the Title IX coordinator tell me that they didn't think that their responsibility was over anything but athletics. So this is definitely something that people, you know, think of when they think of Title IX. And so both of these are very heavily regulated. With respect to Title IX and athletics, we did want to take a second to really build on what Lisa alluded to earlier, which is that it's had such a significant impact. It's been really powerful. Approximately 300,000 females participated in athletics in schools, colleges, and universities before Title IX. Fewer than 30,000 women competed at the collegiate level. And approximately 2% of budgets, athletic budgets in higher education, were spent on women's athletics. In 2021, there are more than 3 million, all right, that's on there twice because it's so important, that's a typo, 300 million female student athletes in schools, colleges, and universities, more than 200,000 NCAA female student athletes. And although we still spend a lot of money on football, it does create very beautiful universities, as I am seeing firsthand. But we spend a lot of money on football, but in the other realms, we're spending a lot more equal money on female athletes.